Okay, we're on page 36 in the Stone Chumash in Chumash Bereishis. We're starting Perek Ches. Okay, so Perek Ches Pasuk Aleph. Like 8 lines down. 9 lines down, whatever. Okay, the story until now, the last thing we learned was Noach himself was in the table, also beaten up and limping and groaning and moaning and coughing of blood. And the water was 150 days. Now, there's a big argument. Does it mean 40 days plus 150 days? Or the 40 days were part of the 150 days? Just different interpretations. Okay. But Yizkir Lekim Es Noach, Hashem remembered Noach. All the animal beasts, and all the animals that were with him in the ark. So Hashem basically remembered them. Now, to understand a little bit, normally the word remember means you forgot it, and then you remembered it. When you say, I remember something, means you forgot it, now you remember it. Hashem never forgets. We say in Davening Rosh Hashanah, there is no forgetfulness by Hashem. So what does it mean, Hashem remembered Noach and all the animals? First of all, what did he remember about the animals? So Rashi says, he remembered that they behaved, both in the Teva, and again, we learned the animals that came into the Teva, into the Ark, were animals that behaved, that's why they came into the Teva. And also that they behaved during the duration that they were in the Teva, like Rashi says. They didn't have relations in the Ark, and they were good before. Okay, Vayizkor Lekim, Noach, Hashem remembered the righteousness of Noach. So Rashi asks, number one, a lot of the Kamis ask, Elohim normally is the attribute of judgment. Vayizkor Elohim, Hashem's doing an act of mercy, he's stopping the flood. Why is it called Elohim? Why is it the Torah using the Shetzei Vayizkor Hashem, which is more Midas Rachman, the attribute of mercy? Why is Hashem using the word Elohim? So the Vash Rashi says, a very phenomenal concept, Tzadikim transform Midas Adin, the attribute of judgment, of severity, of strictness, of punishment, into an act of kindness. That's the greatness of Tzadikim. Rishoyim, we learn now from other Pesukim, transform kindness of Hashem into strictness and severity, into judgment, Elohim. Tzadikim transform Yudke Vavke, Hashem's name, into Elohim. They transform Elohim into Yudke Vavke, meaning that they take even the Hashem's punishment aspect and they turn it into chesed. But what does it mean again, the concept of vayizkod, of remembering? Now obviously Hashem doesn't, like we say, Hashem doesn't forget. But what does remembering mean? Remembering means you bring something that was, so to speak, in the back, and you bring it up, right? Remembering something means it was either forgotten, and then you remembered it. But it wasn't forgotten completely. Forgotten completely, you're not going to remember it. So remembering means it was, so to speak, in the back, and now it came to the front. Vayizkor Elohim Es Noach, the Mefarshim explain, means Hashem remembered Noach. What do you mean he remembered? How did he, if he didn't forget him? But he brought Noach now, so to speak, to the front burner. He brought Noach in a way that he's going to be remembering Noach and to save him from the flood.
Same language used for Egyptians. Hashem remembered the cry of the Egyptians.
The same thing, right. The same thing in these week's parashas. When it speaks about Hashem remembering the Jews, mm-hmm. What does it mean? It was brought up to him that now he should deal with the Jews on the kinder level. Mm-hmm. Until then, it was forgotten, so to speak. Hashem didn't, obviously, everything comes from Hashem. But Hashem wasn't openly connected to them, and now he's openly connected to Noach and the Jews. That whole thing in this week's parsha, that Hashem remembers the Jews. Okay. Vayava Elohim, okay, and the Ramban says one more point over here. The Ramban says another interesting point. What do you mean Hashem remembered the animals? Animals have no free will. Right? Animals behave or don't behave. It's not up to them. It's up to Hashem. An animal can be punished for doing something wrong. In fact, even the Gemara says, Rashi brings it down later in Chumash, when an ox kills a person, yeah, you kill the ox. It's called Shor HaNiskal. An ox is stoned. Okay? So all the Mefarshim say, why should he kill the ox? He didn't have free choice and chose to kill the person. They don't have free choice. They run an instinct. But the answer is, not because the animal did something. The fact that something bad to a person came about through the animal, so the animal deserves to die. Not because the animal did a sin and you have to forgive him. Right? So the question is that Ramban asks, so what does over here mean that Hashem remembered Noach and the animals? Noach, I understand, he remembered that Noach had a choice to do good or bad, and all the work Noach did in the teva, you know, day and night he was working. Okay, but what does it mean Hashem remembered the animals? They didn't sin, but it wasn't them not sinning. So Ramban says a different interpretation of what Hashem remembered, not like Rashi says that they didn't sin in the ark or even before the teva. What it means is Hashem remembered there was a purpose of creation and Hashem needed animals in the world for the future existence of the world. So Hashem remembered, now it comes the time that the animals should go out into the world. The animals, everybody should go out into the world and run the world the way Hashem wanted at the beginning. Except the people were corrupt, so Hashem had to stop it, and now he remembered it, so to speak.
But why is still, it's not enough reason to kill the animal if the animal was not...
The Gemara said just because something bad happened to a person through the animal, you kill the animal. The animal didn't do anything wrong. Wrong is when you have a choice to do good or bad and you choose bad. If you don't have a choice to do good or bad, you just do bad because that's what your animals are programmed to do, then...
So there's no reason to kill animals.
Yeah, but it says just because something bad happened to a person because of it, that's why you kill the animal.
So after flood, how long it took so that again the world become Ishmash and the same?
Same evil again?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, a bunch of generations, they were Dar HaFlaga, but the Dar HaFlaga, you know, they built the tower. But that wasn't the same level of evil. That's why Hashem didn't destroy them. Hashem didn't destroy them because they weren't bad between man to man. In fact, we'll learn later, the people were very united. And they got together to go fight Hashem, to build a tower. So Hashem says, you know what? As long as you're united, you can do whatever you want. I'm not going to kill you. Hashem didn't destroy them. He just spread them out all over the world with 70 languages, which was the plan anyway. But, okay, so he says, I remember it, that Hashem perceived, so to speak. He understood, not funny expressions. Hashem realized the suffering Noach had in the teva, and he said, it's enough. And the animals, it's enough. And therefore, Hashem doesn't, whenever Hashem does chesed to somebody, this is what Ibn Ezra writes. When Hashem does chesed to somebody, the Torah uses the word remembering. Again, it's a human terms of bringing it to the forefront to think about them, to do good for them. Okay. Rabbeinu B'chaya says, or Bachi, whichever way you pronounce, says an interesting thing. Why is Hashem putting Noach and the animals in the same pasuk? I mean, come on. People are different. Says Noach. By the way, the Mefarshim, why doesn't it say Noach and family? Because Noach was the head of the family, so Noach means everybody. But in the same pasuk, it says Noach and Chaya and Behema. I mean, come on, separate the two at least. So the Rabbeinu B'chaya writes that under divine providence, they're all equal. People, animals, there's divine providence on people, there's divine providence on them, which animals were saved, and so on and so forth. Okay. Vayavar Elokim Ruach al Haaretz, Hashem brought, literally means a spirit. Okay? It was a spirit of comforting. Normally, Ruach means a wind. Ruach normally means a wind. But again, the Mefarshim don't want to say a wind, because wind would be an opposite meaning. When the wind blows, water becomes wilder, then there's no wind, right? If Hashem wants to tame the water now, to stop the flood, Hashem can't use the word, he brought a wind on the water because the wind would make the water wilder. So therefore they learn a spirit of calming and peace. On the earth, what do you mean, on the earth? The earth that covered the whole mabul, that covered the world, and the world calmed down. Okay? Now, what does it mean is, instead of boiling, the water calmed down. Instead of raging water, the water stopped raging. So that's what it means by, like in the Megillah, it says, Chamasa Malch Shochocha, the anger of Achashverosh calmed down. So what it means is, like this, it was boiling, so it was movement, you know, and there was raging water moving all over the place. But you shake on mind, the water come down, it wasn't boiling anymore, it wasn't moving all over the place. It was a calmer thing. Okay, so now it says like this. By Yisachru Mayonis Tahim, the fountains of the deep, because the water, remember, came up from underneath. Vadubas HaShemayim, and the heavens were closed. Like this, the Pasuk said before, the heavens were opened, and it rained. Hashem closed the... By the way, Rashi brings down that... I don't know if it's the only place, it's the only place Rashi says. You know the hot mineral well springs of Tveria? That is the leftover of the flood. Because it says, Mayonis Tahim, Rashi says this, in fact. See, what earlier in the Pasuk, when the Torah is speaking about the opening of the underneath water, over there the Pasuk says, Kol Mayonis Tahim. All the water from underneath came up. Here it doesn't say, Vayisachu Kol Mayonis Tahim. So Rashi says, the hot springs of Tveria, now, the question is, Tveri is in Eretz Yisrael, and we said the Mabul wasn't in Eretz Yisrael. What we discussed earlier, what it actually means is, there was no actual flood in Eretz Yisrael, but the water from the rest of the world did go into Eretz Yisrael. There was no raining, the Mabul was the rain. There was no rain in Eretz Yisrael, but if there's water all over the place, inevitably it's going to go into Eretz Yisrael. What?
Was the flood all over the world, or just that one part?
Whatever the civilized world was.
Okay, and...
But they were spread out already. I don't know, were they in America yet? I don't know, I doubt
not
it.
Not over Israel, though? Not in Israel?
The Medrash says the rain, the Mabul didn't come to Eretz Yisrael. But how did the people in Eretz Yisrael die? Mm-hmm. Right? The answer is, there was no rain in Israel. The Mabul basin was the rain. But the water from other places went to Eretz Yisrael, killed all the people.
Like a protection of Eretz Yisrael?
Just because of the Kedush of it. So the Mabul itself didn't come into Eretz Yisrael.
So I have one more question about the hot springs, because supposedly these hot springs are healthy for people, right? They go there to get, like, cures. Whatever. And that's interesting, because the flood was not a positive thing, but yet this is a positive thing coming out of that.
Because it was the flood's ending. The flood was good or bad?
Well, here we go.
Here we go. Did it purify the world?
Yes.
Okay. So, after the fact, right, the Mabul purified the world. So after the fact, the remnants of the Mabul was good. Rashi doesn't say only, by the way, Rashi doesn't say only, he says, Kagain Chamit Tveria, or Kiyetzaban, similar things like Chamit Tveria.
So how about the ones like in Europe or whatever?
Could be. Rashi doesn't say only, only Tveria. Rashi says Tveria in similar places.
And off the topic, so, like the Libya tar pits, what is that then?
You know something? I lived here 40 years, I was never there.
It smells like tar there.
So?
No,
I don't know, don't ask me about it. I don't know, isn't there? Huh?
Like in bubbles. Yeah. There.
No.
There's pits that are there, and they come from under the ground. And They found a lot of bones in that area.
Like
millions of bones.
Oil there,
no?
Who knows? I don't know.
Well,
no.
Probably has some oil.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there must be oil there if it is there's tar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there is, but this is Israel.
All of LA has oil on it.
Yeah. No, but this is Israel does not.
Okay, let's go.
So, but the actual Kinneret, also that water is also from that?
No.
Only this.
Kinneret could have been there from before also. But before the flood, the hot springs of Tveri and these things didn't exist. They existed after the flood. That's when everything went back down. A few places Hashem kept open to have hot springs in the world. Mm-hmm. What?
That's very interesting.
What?
Because, you know, the fact that these hot springs are so old like that.
Well, Rashi says, clear Chametveri. How, are all the hot springs in the world from the flood? I don't know. I mean, maybe, yeah, maybe not.
One in Palm Springs?
Again, did the flood hit, America? I imagine the flood hit the entire civilized world. Because where they lived became corrupt. The earth became corrupt, and that needed purification. In places where people... Now, did people live in America at the time of the flood? I don't know. Probably not. It took time to get there.
Depends if the continents were together.
Okay, whatever. Or they had both. What? I don't know. I don't know. It's possible.
You can see just by the shape.
I understand that doesn't.
That happened like before the.
First of all, there's certain things. Okay, there's certain things in Torah. Torah doesn't necessarily say it didn't happen. There's nowhere in Torah where it says there were no dinosaurs. One second, okay? Were the continents together and then they split? I don't know. Maybe I don't think it says anywhere in Torah that they didn't. That they didn't split. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. I don't know.
No, but the scientists say this is this world is millions and millions and millions of years.
No.
But they say it's not. It's like less than 6,000. It's like a big difference.
Yeah, and even scientists don't have big differences. One says billion, one says 100 million. There's a big difference between 100 million and a billion. You know, that's, it's 900 million. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of years. It's a lot of... It's a long time. And if people came from monkeys, how come there's still monkeys in the world? All the monkeys should have become people. Right? Okay. I mean, there are issues that Torah discusses. For instance, does the earth go around the sun? Does the sun go around the earth? The issues that Torah discusses and brings down the various different opinions of the secular scholars and the Gemara Pesachim has a lot of things about the solar system, you know, a lot of great Tanoim and Amiroim were really experts in the solar system. Shmuel of the Gemara, he says, Nehidenly, he was the rabbi of Nardo, which was a Babylonian town. It wasn't L.A. or New York. You know, it was a small little shtetl, yeah? He said, Nehidenly shvin de rekia, kishvin de Nardoi. I know the streets of the heaven like I know the streets of my hometown. He was an extreme great astronomer. All the people that figured out the lunar system, the sun and the moon, if you could see the moon, again, they were brilliant in astronomy. Today we're building on what they did and we have better equipment, but these people were brilliant in understanding things.
The Zohar, where they understood like, about the stars and everything?
The Zohar talks about it, the Rambam talks about it, the Gemara, the Medrashim talk. I mean, there is, talks about it. Okay. By Yisachru, Pasig Beis. Pasig Gimel. By Yeshuva, Mayim, Yalo Aretz, the waters receded from upon the earth. Holech, Veshev, going back and forth. And the water went down at the end of Chamishim Ma'asyim. At the end of 150 days is when the actual waters receded. Okay? Now, there's no more rain falling. They were restricted. Dudin rain, and two it didn't rain and no dew, no liquid fell from the time all this happened until they left the Taylor. Okay? Now, why did Hashem do it? So the Mefarshim explain, Hashem didn't, if it would start raining again, Noach would get scared and say, oh, there's another flood coming. So Hashem made absolutely no rain, no dew, no moisture at all, until they were able to leave, the Taylor. Okay? Now there's a big argument, I'm not even going into it. Rashi has one opinion, the Ramban has different opinions. Exactly what day the month, the flood started, even in the Jewish calendar, what day it started, what day it ended, and is the 40 part of the 150, is not part of the 150. But the bottom line is, the whole flood lasted, 12 months plus. It's more than a year. It's a few days extra of a year. Okay. So according to Ramban, these 150 days include the first 40 days of the rain. According to Rashi, they don't, are not included. It was 40 days and then 150 days. Okay. V'atonach ha-teva, the teva rested. V'chedesh ha-shvi, and the seventh month, which is again an argument, doesn't mean Tishrei, or doesn't mean seventh month from the time the flood started, so it'll be the month of Av, which is the 10th month from Cheshvan. The whole discussion, what it means. B'shiva seyem l'chedish al horei Ararat. It landed on Mount Ararat. Now, the Mefarshim explained, why did it land on Mount Ararat? At that time...
Where's Mount Ararat?
Okay. They say it's Turkey. Here.
Most
scholars believe right now.
They even found a place.
Well, they found a place. I mean,
they found actually
the,
like a picture that looks like this.
But he brings down in a few interesting things over here. Josephus, mentioned Noach Sark still existed in his time. He was in the time of the destruction of the second base of Mikdash. He writes that the Noach Sark still existed, and it remains. This is what he writes. His remains are shown to the inhabitants to this day, in the Yosefun's time. There's a 12th century traveler, Binyamin of Tudela, says, it was 2 days to Gezerot ibn Omer, which is surrounded by tigers at the foot of the Mount of Ararat. There's a distance of 4 miles to the place where Noach's Ark rested. But somebody took the Ark from the two mountains and made it into a mosque for Mohammedans.
Made what?
It made it a mosque. And he writes, Sefer Yuchsen writes, records that for many generations, people would come to the spot where the Anteva rested, and the sick would come there and be healed. It was like a very special time. But back down to earth a little bit, according to the Medrash, okay, it's the mountain range of Cordina. I don't know what that is, wherever that is.
They go there to do what healed?
The sick people would get healed there.
Just by going there?
Yeah. Okay.
But how did they
the
know?
City of Armenia was built there in the land. Officially, it's supposed to be Turkey.
Yeah, okay.
That's what they say. Now, why did it land on Mount Ararat? Because at that time, Mount Ararat was the tallest mountain in the civilized world at that time.
Still, no?
I don't know. No, the Mefarshim say it could be other mountains after the flood actually just became bigger, whatever way it is. Okay? So some Mefarshim say, like the Radak, why did it land on Mount Ararat instead of a different mountain? Some opinions say because it was the tallest mountain. So logically that's where it's gonna hit the ground first. The Radak says no, because that's where the Teva was. Then maybe it was a bigger mountain a few miles down, but the Teva landed here and it was dry, so that's where he landed. Okay, now, the Mount of Ararat, which is among the highest mountains under the heavens, at 15 cubits of water above the summit. Okay, that's what we're soon going to figure out.
How do you know the name of this mountain?
The Torah says. What do you mean?
Hashem called it Ararat? I mean,
the Pasuk says, Al-Horei Ararat. The only question is, what does Ararat mean? But this they had oral tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu what it meant, like anything else in Torah. That its meaning.
Who named it the mountain Ararat?
No, Hashem said the mountain was Ararat. It
might have been named that way before this happened, but that's the name that people knew.
Okay.
They walked around with names in their mouth from back then.
Big mountain, look at the names.
He goes to the whole actual Cheshmer, Kontra Rabban, Kontra Rashi, when it started, when it finished. It's enough that we get to read it, but it's
still
not.
People,
they, huh?
Still people, they are climbing
Mount Ararat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So some of Fashimun was the highest mountain prior to the flood, and this that mountains today are higher is because of change. A lot of things change in volcanoes and all that. Okay. Now, v'mayim ha'yo ha'lech l'chosar, the water kept going down at Chedesh Ha'asidi. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean the water's diminished completely, because it still took time. He sent out the raven, it came back. It still took time. But I mean, it basically, not entirely, it got much lower. V'asidi be'echol ha'chedesh, on the 10th month, on the first day of the month. Again, most people learn, according to Rashi, it was of, because it's the 10th month from when the flood began in Cheshvan, according to Rashi. Be'echol ha'chedesh means Aleph of, Rish Chedesh of, near the Rosh Hashanah, they were able to see the mountaintops. Now, from here they make a whole Cheshvan. Rashi said, from here you learn that the Teva was submerged in the water 11 Amos. 11 Amos. Which is a lot. It's 22 feet submerged. Now, how they make the Cheshvan that Rashi says that, okay, here it is. From the first day of Sivan until the first day of Av is 60 days. Now, if, based on this, the water receded 1 cubit, 1 amma, every 4 days. So, therefore, by the 16th of the month, the water receded 4 cubits, and the ark rested there for 11 cubits of water.
So 1 inch every day.
Right. No. Quarter cubit per day. A cubit is like, let's see, close to 20 inches. So it went down 5 inches a day. But based on the Cheshvan, you know, because before it sent, that the water was 15 amas. Yeah. Chamesh is amma mumayla govru amayim. Early when it spoke about the flood, it says the flood waters were 15 amas above all the mountains. Okay? Then, when it went down, okay, when the water was going down, so it had to go down to the highest mountain. That's 15 amas. Correct? It took 60 days to go down 15 amas. Correct? Mm-hmm. That means 4 amas. Yeah, 4 amas. 4 days per amma.
Well, let me ask you a question.
They had to go... The mountains here, the water was 15 amas above the water.
With 20 amas, you said 10 amas into the water.
11.
11, so...
1 second, that's the Cheshvan, so 1 second. So you have like this. Here was the top of the mountain, the water covered 15 feet. Now, in 60 days, the Teva landed on the mountain.
Right.
Right. Now, in order for that to happen, it went down 4 cubits in 1 day. No, 1 cubit every 4 days. So then it makes sense when the Teva landed on the water, on the mountain, it's because that Cheshvan of going down, so then we know that the Teva was 11 amas buried under the water. So the Farshim asked, by the way, just scientifically, they asked, it's very difficult. Because then the Teva should have sunk if it's that deep in the water. Relative to the size, it was 30 amas high. Right? That means over a third of it was sunk in the water. So then they're right, it really should have sunk, but it didn't, which is another miracle by itself. Okay, he waited another 40 days. Now, after the water landed below the top mountain and the Teva came onto the mountain, he waited 40 more days. Okay? So according to this, this is the 10th of Elul, right? If they, and Rosh Chodesh Av, they hit the mountain, right? They landed on the mountain. So then, another 40 days would make Yud Elul. Neach opened, Avayiftach Neach has Chalena Teva Shirasa. Neach opens the window of the Teva that he made. Because before, Tzoyhar Tassel Teva, one interpretation is a window. Okay, so it's not the door of the ark. It was a window. Now, Noach knew that the rain stopped earlier, but he wanted to wait enough time to be able to send out an animal because there was still water all over the place. Let me send out the bird. Some of us should say he opened it up periodically just to see what's going on. Okay. Okay, like he brings down the Ramban suggests that after the rain stopped, Neach would open the window every so often to see what's going on outside. And when he saw that it was, then he realized it landed on Mount Ararat. And then he waited another 40 days to open the window again. Then he hoped that the trees and the, you know, everything else was already showing. Okay. What did he do? He sent the Erev, okay, the raven, to see what he wanted to see. If there was a place for him to stop by, to go. He went back and forth, going and coming, until the water dried up on the earth. Okay? Now, what did Noach want over here? He wanted to ascertain what the world, this is what the Medrash says, he wanted to ascertain what the world was like, how much it settled down and so on. Now, the raven refused to go.
First time
the raven refused to go. He said, V'yishalach ha-se'erev. He kept going around. He kept going around the teva. Okay. Why? Listen to this. And from here they say, by the way, the Mefarshim explained that Noach knew the languages of the birds and beasts. Because he communicated with the Erev. Now, what happened was, the Erev didn't want to go. Why didn't the Erev want to go? He said, I don't understand. He wants to probably be with my wife, the male and female of the tray for birds, right? So Noach probably wants to be with my wife, so he's sending me away. Why doesn't he take from the kosher animals? There's 14 of them. 7-7, right? There's 14. Why didn't he take and send out a kosher bird? So he probably wants, he was accusing Noach of what, so he didn't want to go. Aleich v'shev, he kept going and coming back. He didn't. Why? You know they say an expression, if in Ganef brennt hittel, and the Ganef that has burning?
Ganef has a burning?
It's a Yiddish expression, if in Ganef brennt hittel. It means on the Ganef and the thief, the hat is burning. What's that expression mean? There's a story. A bunch of people were there, and somebody stole something. And they couldn't figure out who it was. right? Mm-hmm. And if all of a sudden the rabbi screamed out that the hat of the ganef is burning. So right away, God put his hand on his head. So you knew he was the guilty one. Okay? Now, three things had relations in the ark. Remember, we learned nobody was allowed to have relations in the ark. Three things did. Chum, the raven, and the dog. These are the three things. And each one was punished, by the way. Chum, therefore, his skin turned brown and all that stuff. And dogs is also because they were punished. Here. Kelev Nemek said, after relations, he's still connected to the female and it's embarrassing. And it's interesting that the children of the raven come through the mouth. Whatever, that's what the Medrash says. Bottom line is, the Erev obviously wasn't honest, because he did something in the Teva he didn't want to do. So when Noach sent him out, he was fearful that Noach wanted to be with his Mrs. Erev. So that's why he said, V'yeh lech v'sherev, he didn't really go on the shlichas. He just, the Rashi says, Heilich u'makev svivus ha-teva v'loi holach b'shlichusei, shayachesh dey abazugay. This is Gemara Sanhedrin, Rashi brings down, the Erev didn't want to go out. He was afraid Noach was going to do something. Okay. So it says now, but the Mefarshim say, by the way, they don't know exactly why. What was the reason why he sent a raven first? Could be because he sinned. Maybe that's why he wanted to send them out first. I don't know. Even though Zipporna was says to see if the air was dry enough for the raven to endure it. And he said, why? Ravens feed on carrion of man and beast. If the raven would bring back some, he would know that the water descended enough for the raven to have found some meat on the ground. So, now, also...
That's why he sent the raven?
Right. So now the Gemara asks, but why did he send the raven? Because if something happens to the raven, there's no more ravens in the world, because there's only two ravens. So, the answer, the Gemara answers, because the raven was one of the three things that didn't behave in the Teva. And therefore, and now, another interesting thing, why did he send the Erev? Because the Erev had relations with his spouse, and she was already incubating eggs. So there was a future already for the raven. Because the mother was pregnant already, whatever you call it, by a bird. She was pregnant with the raven, despite the survival was definite.
But why were they not allowed to have relations with the raven?
Why? Why they were not allowed to have relations? When the world is suffering, people can't have relations. You know, a few parshas ago, when Yosef was made the king, mm-hmm. then it says Yosef had two children before the hunger happened. Mm-hmm. Why does it have to say before the hunger happened? Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, that during the hunger years, you're not allowed to have relations. Why? Because the world is suffering, you don't have relations. So that's, in fact, you learned it out from Yosef. So some people say, in fact, when the raven came back, look what it says. It doesn't say Noach stuck out his hand to take back the raven. By the dove, when he sent the yoina, right? Then he sent the yoina. Okay? Then what happened? Halira said, "Kalo amayim to see if the water subsided from the face of the earth." The yoina, the dove, didn't find any piece to his feet. No, there's no place to be. But Tashav Elav al Tev, he came back to the Tev. What does it say? Noach stuck out his hand to bring the dove back into the ark. By the raven, the Torah doesn't say he took out his hand. He stuck out his hand to bring the raven back. Because Noach was angry at the raven for what he did in the Teva that he wasn't allowed to do.
But the raven came back for him.
He did come back. He didn't go anywhere. What?
No, but those, ravens, I think they're still around, right? Aren't there those the black birds that you see?
Yeah, ravens are still around.
But there's so many of them. Like, I don't remember there being so many.
When?
Now.
There are always a lot of ravens.
A lot of ravens around.
No, so what's the problem?
I just want to know, is it a crow? Not a crow, but it's similar.
The raven came to Nayach and said, why are you sending me? It's not fair. Send the other birds. So Nayach said to him, okay, so he said like this, you hate me because you only took two of me, okay, and maybe you will desire my mate. So Nayach said, even evil one, even my wife, who's usually permitted to me, has been permitted to me in the ark. How much more I think I'm going to be with your mate. I'm not going to be with my wife, I'm going to be with your mate. So Nayach says like this, going out and refuting, meaning it was singled out from all the birds that he said to him like this. Nayach said to the raven, the world doesn't need you. They can't eat you. You're not kosher. They can't bring you as a sacrifice. So, who needs you? So it says, the Medrash goes on to show that the raven was needed. When Eliyahu HaNavi ran away, the Pasuk says in Melachim that the raven brought Eliyahu HaNavi food every day. So he said, you see, Hashem said, the raven is needed. Otherwise, the question, why did Hashem need him to be alive? And why did Hashem need the species of ravens in the world? Well, he can't eat them, he can't bring korban, so what needs them? What's the purpose? So that says, like, remember David HaMelech with the spider saved his life. Everything Hashem made is needed.
Ravens, the same bird that it says, if you see far away in Israel.
No, that's the Ra.
Huh?
The Ra, it's called. That bird is called Ra.
They're not very nice looking, though.
What?
Ravens. No, they are.
What can I tell you?
No, they're very, like, ferocious. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But they come very, like, they swoop down and they scare me in the morning. I go to work, basically.
Okay, but he said, the Mashal explains, interestingly, doves, the dove bird, is very devoted to its mate, and the ravens aren't. Okay, obviously he was successful because Nech was able to get information from them. Okay, now finally, Adyavashis Hamayim El Oritz, it continually flew back and forth, and there was nothing. Okay, now he said, after 7 days, by the way. Okay? Because in another pasuk later, it says he waited 7 days and sent again the dove. Which means he probably waited 7 days, the Mepharshim explained, before he sent the dove for the first time. So first he sent the raven. When the raven finally came back, he waited 7 days, and he sent the dove. The dove came back, there was nothing doing yet. He waited 7 days and again sent the dove. And then he didn't come back. Okay.
Then he came back with the branch or something.
That's later. We didn't get there. What?
Is there like an inner meaning to all this? Like, does the Rebbe speak about it or anything with the coming and the going and the back? It seems like so many details related to it. It has to have like some, like, you know what I'm saying?
There's a lot of things you can learn from these things. I mean, honest people don't accuse other people of doing things wrongly. Okay? Mm-hmm. The fact that the raven did accuse Nayach of wanting to be with Mrs. Erev, mm-hmm. right? The Torah is teaching us, but the dove didn't. The dove didn't have a problem because he knew that there was nothing going to be. Right? Because they're loyal to one another. So the moral of the story is, if a person is a person who accuses everybody for wrongdoing, mm-hmm. it shows that they are really wrongdoers, because they don't trust anybody else. A trusting person, I mean, a person who is honorable trusts others. And you know what's interesting? When you trust others, they take it, don't do what's wrong. You know, when parents trust their kids at a certain age, then the kids are not going to do something wrong. When they feel trusted. It's when they feel the parents don't trust them, that's when they'll do something wrong. I'll give you a simple example from California. Years ago, you know, you left a package down somewhere in an airport, in 2 seconds it was gone. You know, you put down a package, in a second it was gone. By Disneyland, everybody, you know, you go into a ride, everybody left the strollers there. Even with things in the stroller. And nothing was ever stolen. Why? Because everybody trust. It's such an environment. It's such a peaceful environment, for whatever reason. Yeah? That people just, it was a trusting environment. And in a trusting environment, you don't do wrong. And you see that from here also. The Erev suspected Nayach, so therefore he didn't know what he had to do. He kept going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. The Dove, which was trusted, and trusted, so he did his mission. You know, in fact, some of Fashimlun, when it says by the Erev, Vayetze Yotzei Vashayv, coming and going, the Mepharshim say it actually represents the dialogue between Noach and the raven. Remember, there was a whole dialogue. The raven says to Noach, why did you pick me? You hate me. You only took two of me, and you took... right? So there's a whole debate going on back and forth. Yeah? So that's Yotze Vashayv, going and coming. I mean, asking, answering, going... Mm-hmm. I don't know. Okay, Pasuk Tes. It didn't find a place to rest its feet. It returned to the Teva. Because there's still water. In other, the top of the mountains were clear, but there's still water much lower down. But he sent it out. He sent out his hand. He took it back. He brought it back to the Mabul, to the Teva. Okay, so here he brings down, do you want to learn like a lesson from this Yaina stuff? Okay, the Medrash says like this. Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Nachman said, had the Yaina, the dove, found a place to rest, it wouldn't have returned. The Jews, in many psukim, Yainasi, Tamasi, the Jews are likened to a dove. Shereshidim, many places, there's a lot of psukim that the Jews are likened to the dove. The Medrash perceives dove as an allegorical symbol of Israel, okay? Similarly, she dwelt among the nation, but found no rest. But had she, Israel, found rest, she would have not have longed to return to God in Israel to the land. And then another was like this. The Jews are the Yaina. Hashem sends out the Jews into a tumultuous world. The world of Golus. Okay? But they always have the yearning to come back to the Teva, to come back to Hashem. If the Jews would get too comfortable in Golus, then they wouldn't have the yearning to go back to the Teva. In this respect, the Medrash says, just as the dove found no right resting place, so the Yidden did not find a haven rest in exile, but the dove returned to the ark, so will Israel return to the exile to their land, and the Eden are going to come back. As long as the Shechina is in exile, it may be said of her, the dove found no rest, because no righteous was found who would give her rest. Now the Shechina either refers to the Jews, that the Jews don't find rest in Golos, and therefore they will always come back to Hashem, or Hashem found no rest in exile, because the Shechina isn't, the Divine Presence is in Golus. So the Shekhinah doesn't find a presence there. In it's uncomfortable.
So why the dog never came back then?
This stuff, the first one did.
The first one did, and the second one was
another. We sent it again.
Same dog.
Yeah.
So why he never came back?
Because he found a place. That's the sign that the flood's over.
But the what about his
wife? Dove is a kosher bird, so there is a bunch of them.
What about, because there were seven of them.
Right. 14 of them. But the Mepharshim say, why did he stick out his hand to analyze the dove? He wanted to see the wings, was in mud, or to figure out the state of the earth at that time. There's another interesting lesson. Oh, we'll just finish with this. The Yaina was sent on a mission. He came back unsuccessful. He didn't find the place.
The raven.
Huh? No, the Yaina.
The first time.
The dove.
Okay.
The dove was sent out. He came back with a failed mission. Yet, Noach treated it like a dove that would have fulfilled the mission. And therefore, the Mepharshim say, out of pity, Noach's compassion teaches that one should treat a disappointing messenger just as well as a successful one if the failure of the mission was beyond the control of the messenger. It wasn't up to the Yaina to fulfill his mission. Right? He had to come back. He didn't fulfill the mission. Yet Noach treated him 100% like he did if he would have did the mission properly. Okay, then he waited another week just to make sure that the water is going to go down. Okay.